We haven't entirely nailed down what element it is yet, but I'll tell you this, it's a lively one.
Let's give your parents a call right now.
Hello! Welcome to episode number 13 of Gaming with the Monks. My name is Nicole Tanner. I am managing editor at Pixelkin.org and the currently exhausted mother of a three-year-old. I am joined by fellow mom Linda Brenneman.
Hello.
And Squeak Kids, Simone de Rochefort and Courtney Holmes.
Yay! So, let you come back? I thought you were in Ohio for eternity.
I was in Ohio.
Did it feel like an eternity?
No, Chicago felt like an eternity. Ohio, we were only there for a few days. So my sister and my brother went to my 20th high school reunion, as opposed to what Courtney said last week.
I'm sorry. 75.
Right, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. I honestly hadn't seen these people in 20 years.
Wow.
I was, I've been in touch with them on Facebook and whatnot. But the thing is, like, most of them haven't left Ohio.
Yeah.
And I did, so that's why I
good
don't see
you.
Them.
Okay, nothing against Ohio. I'm sure it's a nice place.
But it was cool because, like, my close circle of friends that I had in high school, they were all there.
Nice. So oh, that's awesome. So cool.
Yeah, to get to see everybody. Chicago, on the other hand, was exhausting because we had so many family and friends, many of whom have never met Anna. So
how did she take it?
She was good. I mean, she was more rambunctious as a three-year-old, but she was pretty good. Everybody loved her.
Nice. Well, of course they do. Yeah. She's adorable.
A couple of Isaac's great aunts that we went to go visit, or Isaac's aunts, they're Anna's great aunts, have these nice, neat, beautiful homes with these expensive knickknacks and whatnot. And she starts running around the living room, and I'm like, ugh. I get up, and his aunt's like, oh, it's fine. Let her go. I'm like, are you kidding me? So
impending disaster.
Exactly. An impending joke. So I was listening to episode 12 as we were driving around the west suburbs of Chicago in the car. And Simone made one of her trademark beautiful laughs, after which my daughter went, completely no prompting. She just did it. So, yes, Simone, you are being made fun of by a three-year-old.
First of all, I want to caution you that laughing like me is a learned habit, and it is addictive. So you should probably nip that in the
bud. Training the next generation of laughers.
Yeah.
Yep. I should teach classes.
Yeah.
What am I doing with my life? You need to trademark that laugh. It's like a signature move.
It needs to be
like
free,
a Pokemon,
Courtney.
Or something.
So that was a trip, fun but exhausting, and that's the only thing I've got for you guys today. Unless you say something,
all right,
that,
I'll come up.
I'll be quick on the cuff
sick
about
burns.
All right, so let's get into the news. So MineCon, which is a huge convention all about Minecraft, happened, when was it? Early last week?
You're looking at me as if I know the dates.
But it happened, and there were lots of things that came out of it. Story mode. What's that all about? Story mode for Minecraft?
I honestly read not that article.
All right.
I failed in my mission to you.
Tell us about what you did read, Simone.
Two of the exciting things that happened Minecraft related this week are, one, that the Builder Bowl is happening, and that is being put on by the Immersive Education Initiative. So basically they're doing this competition where they are getting kids to build content and applications in Minecraft. And what they're planning right now, they're making Disney and Marvel themed things, and the winners of that competition will go to Immersion 2015, which is a big conference in Paris, which I'm super jealous about, and I wish I had known about this. Not that I have any talent at building things in Minecraft, but any excuse to go to Paris. So the championship round in Paris, they have to build basically a historical educational opportunity in Minecraft. Uh-huh. And the winners of that will have their historical content be used by teachers in classrooms. It'll be part of this online library where teachers can get educational materials that are, Minecraft-based to use in the classroom.
Very cool.
This is super, super awesome. And what's, I think, coolest about it is that they had limited it to people who were enrolled in the IED. And there were so many submissions and people asking to sign up that they said, okay, any student can enter. And
cool.
It that goes from K through 8 or K through 12 all the way to college, because they said, you know, the elementary students who are working in Minecraft, they're making things that are just as advanced as
right.
what college students are making. So there's no point in, you know, separating these people by age. Let's just see what happens. And it just is really cool.
So an example of that might be, say, maybe building a Civil War battlefield or something.
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
kind of like what it would be.
Exactly.
I can imagine the kids would learn a ton from that.
Yeah,
right?
Like, because you have to do all that research if you're
right.
going to make something that is, you know, historically accurate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I'm excited to see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing that happened is that there is a Minecraft mod called ComputerCraft EDU that a bunch of teachers made, and they're using it to teach programming concepts to kids. They have these turtles in the game, these robot turtles, that you can program. So they're using that to teach kids concepts of loops and conditions and debugging in Minecraft in the classroom, which is awesome.
Turtles.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's some of the same people that made – there's this early learning – programming game.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the name of it right now, but it has turtles in it too.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, like we bought it for my daughter. She's a little too young to do it. Like, I always buy things for her. It's like ages 5+. We try to set it out and get her to do it, and she's like runs off with the pieces, and you know. So,
well, she is not yet 5.
No,
nor
she is
plus.
Not. But I bought this coding. It's like board game.
Yeah,
like where you have to put down arrows to tell the turtle which way to go, so that he gets to the end. So it's basically like, you know, you're choosing the directional path to get the turtle there, which teaches very basic programming concepts.
That's very cool.
That reminds me of one of the puzzles in Logical Journey of the Zumbinis.
Oh, my goodness. We heard about Zumbinis last week. Well, we didn't really hear about them.
I feel like we hear about Zumbinis every week.
We heard Courtney going, Zumbinis.
Still not out yet, right?
No, not quite, but very soon. Mm-hmm. They said it was still on target for midsummer release, and the Kickstarter backers are going to get their survey like within a week.
I hate it when I can't remember if I backed a Kickstarter or not, and then I always like – I always think, man, I wish I could back that, and it may or may not be too late. I don't actually know.
For the Zumbinis one? It ended ages and ages ago.
Well, if I already backed it, it's not too late.
Oh, right.
But if I haven't, it is.
It's always sort of
See?
A fun surprise when I get an
Conditional.
Email.
See? We're learning programming concepts, Courtney.
I will sometimes get emails that are like, the game you backed on Kickstarter, here it is. And I'm like, oh, I forgot all about this. It was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what it is with turtles and programming, though.
Maybe
it's because they eat bugs.
What does
maybe?
That
– Oh, no, turtles don't eat bugs. They eat plants.
Okay. I don't know what turtles eat.
I'm pretty sure it's plants.
I think they eat worms.
Okay.
I think it depends.
You were going to say something, though.
I was going to make a I noticed that you're making a debugging joke, and I was going to point it out. But there's another really cool Minecraft mod that I saw Achievement Hunter play in one of their Let's Plays the other day, which is dinosaurs. And basically, you can craft dinosaur eggs, and then eventually they'll hatch.
Nice.
And so I think they had like a plesiosaur and a T-Rex, and the T-Rex started eating all their horses, which was tragic. But it was
but
really
But you know
cool.
what? If you're going to put a T-Rex in there,
that's
you
what you get.
Gotta expect
that's what you get.
What it's going to do.
I learned that from Jurassic Park.
That reminds me
That was
of,
goats, though. Yeah. T-Rex right there. Oh, right there. Ate the goat in Jurassic Park.
And
Sorry.
Some people too.
I was just reminded by the dinosaurs about one thing in that story mode thing. There is a dragon in story mode. And there's a story that Kesey wrote on Pixelkin about it. So
Minecraft just got 100% more interesting to me.
There was already a dragon, though. It was the Ender Dragon. That
no,
was
I'm
like
talking
the...
about story mode.
Oh, story mode.
Like, no, the dragon, too. But, like, you know, I've got so little time to play games now. So I just go play around in Minecraft and build something. It's just not my thing.
Now
but
you know
if now there's a story, I will go in and do
that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I feel like the younger you are, the more fun you have in creative mode, with some exceptions. But I think it's easier for younger kids to get immersed in that. Older kids like to have some tasks, something to follow. By older kids, I mean me. So, yeah, stories are great.
And me.
And you.
20 and up.
We put the plus in 5+.
Nice.
Thank you. That's right.
Nice. That's very nice. So what else is going on? So there was a big Reddit debacle that happened. Linda, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. A huge protest took place. A bunch of subreddits got shut down because someone was fired.
Mm-hmm. Victoria Taylor, who managed the Ask Me Anything feature on Reddit, which is super, super popular. And people, basically how it works is often celebrities or, say, political figures like Obama, who did one last year or in 2013.
I think it was last year, yeah.
Yeah, they'll provide proof that they're doing an Ask Me Anything. So they'll, like, tweet a picture with a photo of them saying Ask Me Anything. And then in the Reddit, on the Reddit board, you can ask them questions and they'll just give you an answer. Jeff Goldblum did a really amazing, quintessentially Jeff Goldblum. So much.
Speaking of dinosaurs,
yeah,
it's all coming full circle here.
Yeah. I want a T-Rex to do an AMA, but I guess it would have trouble reaching the keyboard. Little tiny arms.
Yes.
There are so many problems with
that. There are so many, like, shirts and memes with that thing. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. It never stops being funny, though.
I know. It doesn't. It doesn't.
How could you make fun of the T-Rex?
Because it's not here to defend itself.
Oh, God. Exactly, just like me, the last episode.
So, yeah, Victoria Taylor was fired.
She was very popular, and I guess the subreddits are managed by volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt like they were not being respected and valued enough. And so a lot of the really popular ones, including the gaming one and the movie one, were set to private, which meant that basically nobody could use them.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted a few days, and then they all got back to business. But there are problems on Reddit, I think, right now involving what users can say and what they can't say. And the new CEO, Ellen Pao, seems to be cracking down a little bit, or trying to, on what stuff can be said on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the old timers, the people who've been using Reddit a long time, kind of are resenting that.
Yeah, Reddit is really, really big on free speech and being able to post anything, which has resulted in some good communities. There are lots of people who have found friends and community on Reddit. They share articles and have conversations about them. And then there are other subreddits, like the one that was shut down recently, which is called, or was called, Fat People Hate, which is where people would post pictures of overweight people and make fun of them for it. And
disgusting.
Yeah, it's just this weird amalgamation of decent people and then people who go online to do really horrible things and say really horrible things. And so the issue there is, like, should Reddit be a place where these people get to say whatever they want to say, or should they be – basically, should Reddit have an image that does not endorse that kind of hate speech? And there was also an issue, I think, a year ago or so with pictures of underage girls that were being floated around, like pictures that people would take in public without anyone's consent and post them online.
Yeah. It's a matter of where those lines are regarding harassment and hate speech.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the struggle is going on. But it's really hard to figure out where that line should be. And there's going to be a big fight over it, looks like.
It's interesting. If you think about, there's a couple different ways you could approach Reddit as an entity. Like, obviously, it is its own community. There are people who go to Reddit who spend a lot of time there and get to know each other. But it also sort of bills itself as being the front page of the internet, right? So it presents this whole cross-section of just what's going on in this online community that's not exactly a community, but is this service that billions of people use.
Yeah.
And as a cross-section, it represents all of these different things. It's going to have a lot of different kinds of opinions, and it's just so vastly more diverse than other communities on the internet for that reason, that its whole idea is sort of like, it's kind of like the table of contents of interesting things online.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of news outlets get their stories from Reddit. Like, news stories will appear on Reddit first, and then journalists who spend their time culling Reddit for interesting things will take them directly from Reddit and then research them more, and then they get onto the news cycle. So it's sort of, if you spend time on Reddit, it's interesting to watch a news story, like, go through that whole cycle, and it happens over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma. What do you guys think? Do you think Reddit should have stronger rules about harassment and free and hate speech?
I don't know. I'm, like, on the fence. Like, the thing is, though, if you're going to be all for free speech, you kind of have to let people say what they want to say, because it's kind of a slippery slope. If you say, this person can't say this, and then it becomes this person, then these people can't say that, and, you know, it's weird. Even though I think, obviously, we abhor and hate some of the things that are being said, at the same time, you know, unless it's illegal.
Well, I think
people
we do
right
draw.
To do it.
Yeah, we do draw the line at child pornography.
Yes.
And,
Or like, I'm really pleased that revenge porn is becoming illegal in more and more places because that's so awful. Yeah. Which is when, you know, you post pictures or video of somebody that you used to be in a relationship with in compromising situations to like discredit them, and like it is. Law enforcement has a really hard time of grasping new technology. Like if you are being harassed online, most police officers tend to say, like, guess you just should delete your Facebook. And they don't really understand that that's not enough. Like, even if you were able to remove yourself from the internet, which so many people can't for their livelihoods, like, we can't do it. We would all lose our jobs. the stuff is still going to be out there. There's still going to be millions of people maybe looking at this, you know, sexy photo that you took of yourself to send to your then boyfriend who then betrayed your trust. Like, that's, it's so disturbing.
And what happened last week, I believe, was Google made revenge porn websites unindexed. So you can no longer access them through Google.
Yay.
Obviously, they're still out there. Mm-hmm. Google doesn't actually control the internet, but that stuff is no longer available. Yeah, right there in front of your eyes.
Yeah, they don't control the internet.
Ari, free speech on Reddit. I am always my baseline opinion on issues like this is if a company decides that those hateful words, or if a company defines their what they think of as words that they don't want to be said on their website, they have every right to say, you have to go talk about this somewhere else. And I think that if people really want a community like that where they can spend their time disparaging people online, they will find a place to do it. If Ellen Powell wants to say, you know what, that's not what Reddit is going to be, I think that she has every right to do that.
Absolutely. I was saying free speech before, it's very general. Private companies can do whatever the heck they want with this.
And that's what people, like, they see Reddit as this bastion of free speech. Reddit isn't a bastion of free speech. Reddit is a company that runs a website that formerly had fewer rules.
Yeah.
So...
And now that Reddit is also kind of pushing toward more commercialization, things may have to change at Reddit a little bit.
They haven't been doing that well financially, if I'm not if I'm not incorrect. Like, they have trouble monetizing because, you know, they have millions and millions of users, but there's no real way to make revenue off of them.
Yeah. Something worth taking from this is that there's no such thing as a table of content for the internet unless the NSA has one. Reddit can't offer that service as much as they want to. It's never going to be complete because then you get into the creepy child porn stuff, which, you know, that doesn't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yes, exactly.
Go to 4chan.
Okay, so let's go back to some positive news here. So the National Museum of Natural History, I almost called this the Field Museum because I was just in Chicago. The National Museum of Natural History held this really cool workshop. It was an intergenerational game-making workshop where they got grandparents and kids,
yay,
people of all ages working together to kind of come up with ideas that could be made into a video game. And it was super cool. It was actually sponsored by the AARP, which I find completely amusing.
I love it.
And it wasn't to teach game design exactly, but to kind of combat that generational divide that happens with people.
Yeah. What I think was so cool about this, like, they had, you know, people working in teams, parents, grandparents, kids, etc. And what they had to do, you know, to make this game that would appeal intergenerationally, if that is a word, is, you know, talk about what appeals to them. Like, what would be problematic for, say, an a 70-year-old using a game. Like, so you have to kind of talk about what your limitations are and what you would like to see and then make that into something together, you know, by talking and having a good time.
I would love to have done something like this with my grandparents. That would have been so fun.
Uh-huh.
My remaining grandmothers, I think, would not be very interested.
You gotta be open to it. Yeah. I feel like I harp on this every time we talk about activities that you can do with paper, but make a freaking board game. Like, it's so much fun. If you've played one board game in your life, you can make a board game with paper and pens and whatnot, you know, stuff you have lying around your house.
Like,
it's really fun.
I thought it was interesting that it said if you can make a board game, you can make a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Right.
And if you play soccer, you can do either, I believe was the quote from the person from the Sesame Workshop.
Right. Go ahead. You didn't say anything?
I forgot. I'm
sorry. You forgot? You're getting old, Courtney.
Little kids can even make board games because they did that on the Creative Galaxy.
Aw.
And I'm going to morph here into children's television again. Amazon has actually on their streaming video service has some original programs that they've had on there. One of them is called The Creative Galaxy, where it's all about making art and your little alien that travels to different planets like Sculptoria and the Builder Planet and, you know, all these kinds of places. But in between each story segment, they get a bunch of little kids together, like live action kids, that they make the project that they were doing in the story.
I love the phrase live action kids.
Live action kids. one of the things
was living human children.
One of the things on there was making a board game, and they just illustrated very easily how it was to do that.
You just gave me an epic flashback. When I was like 9 or 10, my neighbor down the street wrote children's books, I guess, and he was on like an Home Garden television like commercial special where he needed a couple of kids to make a little hot air balloon with him, and he grabbed me. So like I was part of this little HGTV TV spot that I never watched. I filmed the whole thing. I've never seen it. So
if anyone knows where that special
is. You've seen
is.
Two kids making a hot air balloon on HGTV in the like late 90s, let me know.
I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere.
Tangent train. Sorry, guys.
I just got caught up by the he grabbed me.
No. I know.
No, I think I was just walking down the street and was like, you want to be on TV, kid?
The mom radar went.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah.
No, he asked my dad. It was okay.
Sign a media consent form or anything? Did they just put you on TV?
It was a long time ago. I'm 75 years old.
For trauma. Childhood trauma.
Wow.
End flashback.
Yes.
That was beautiful.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for taking us into your world.
Yes.
I forgot that had happened.
Well, I'm glad we could remind you. In other news, PewDiePie. Everybody knows who PewDiePie is. I honestly didn't know who he was until I took this job. But he has made $7 million last year.
Yep.
$7 million.
For making Let's Plays. And he does streams too, right? Or does he just do Let's Plays?
I have no idea.
I think he's in everything.
Yeah. You know,
$7 million, that is a lot for one guy.
I guess they specifically said YouTube when they were reporting it, so it might just be the Let's Plays. I think he's cool. I think he's a cool guy. We don't necessarily always share the same sense of humor, but he seems very like a lovely, down-to-earth person who happens to be a millionaire. So, and really good-looking, too.
I know. I couldn't believe how...
What some people just have it all.
Yeah. And so that $7 million is almost double what he made last year.
Yeah.
So
he's on the way up.
Who knows what he'll be making this year.
And that story went up on Pixelkin today with the video of him kind of justifying and explaining why he's not a bad person for making so much money. And I thought it was really smart and interesting.
People love to make snide comments about, oh, you just play games and post them online. Like, why do you make so much money? No, Courtney and I have made Let's Plays before. Like,
it's really hard
to get yourself, first of all, in that headspace where you're going to play a game and be entertaining and be funny.
It's probably why we haven't done one in a while.
Yeah. But he does that, you know, every day a week. And then on top of that, you know, the time to edit it together and make it into something funny. Like, that's not trivial. I think sometimes he does, you know, ones where he's just going through and you see everything. But also he does, like, I watched the one that he did of Limbo, which is a really challenging platformer. And, you know, he cut out the 90-something times that he died because that's not fun to watch. And I think that, you know, there is work that goes into that. There is artistry that goes into that. And also just to be a personality is not something
trivial
either.
If you think it's so easy, go do it yourself.
Yeah.
He's an entertainer.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, he's a comedian and an entertainer, and that's what people are paying him for. Yeah.
I bet you he could use all that footage of him dying in Limbo and make a really funny montage of it.
Maybe he will.
Yeah.
Hour-long montage.
If you're listening, PewDiePie.
Yes.
That was Nicole's idea.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, people aren't even paying
me $1 million for that.
We'll expect the check next week.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The PewDiePie, he swears in his videos, right?
He does swear.
He does.
We've met a lot of kids who really like PewDiePie, so that's just a... Just so you know, parents, he swears.
Yeah.
He's cool, though. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. There are other Let's Players who are popular, like Captain Sparkles, and I think he doesn't swear as much or at all. Yeah. Right?
He's a little creepier looking, though.
Aw. He looked really cute because he's visiting some of the Super League Gaming events, and, like, kids are taking pictures with him, and he seemed like a really sweet, nice man.
All right.
Man.
Well, it's just in the photos I've seen online. It's just... you know, I don't know. Whatever.
How dare you insult Captain Sparkles, Nicole?
I'm sorry, Captain Sparkles.
And, of course, Simone and I never swear in our lives.
Ever.
Friends. We are kid-friendly.
Because I cut that out.
So you don't have to.
Yes.
Anytime you hear an audio jump in one of our Let's Plays, it's me.
They slipped up.
Yeah.
So in news of a game that you guys are never going to Let's Play, but Courtney was... forced to play.
Oh, we might Let's Play it.
No.
I need the world to know.
Yeah. So Sega, the Sega boss has come out and said, we are sorry for making such bad games. Specifically in reference to Sonic Boom, Rise of the Lyric, which Courtney reviewed for us last year.
Yes.
So just how bad was Sonic?
I've conveniently made a list of a few of my problems that I had with Sonic Boom, Rise of the Lyric for Wii U. I never had any idea where I was going because there was nobody giving me instructions. And when they did, they were really fast and you couldn't replay them. Almost nothing you couldn't interact with things. So, like, the environments looked kind of cool, but then you couldn't climb on them or jump on them. And there was, like, a crashed airplane, and I was like, I want to fly it. And they kept talking about the airplane, but then I couldn't ever fly it. They wouldn't let me fly it. That wasn't cool. There were almost no characters to talk to, and the ones that I could talk to were just like, come back and talk to me later. And I'm like, thanks for nothing. Or they would be referencing all these other people who weren't around them, like the mayor who kept talking about, like, all of my townspeople, and there was nobody in the town. It was just super glitchy. Like, Sonic's whole thing is that he moves fast, but every time he moved fast in this game, there were so many screen jumps and stuff that I just felt sick. And, like, the controller wouldn't respond to my touching, so that, like, it was impossible to dodge obstacles, except that it didn't matter if I died over and over again because you just were revived immediately with no consequences. There were little rings everywhere. They were everywhere. You could collect them, but then your ring meter maxed out at 100, and then when you died, they just all vanished except for 20, so it was like there was no point in the rings. There was nothing except for when you really needed them because you were dying, and then they were nowhere to be found. I had to replay an entire hour-long mission because the game glitched. There was one boss battle that every time it started up, I just died automatically, and I had to rewatch his cutscene like 12 times.
It was
just on and on. And the characters kept on just nonstop talking, and that was okay, except that they were always like 2 minutes behind, so it didn't make any sense. And, like, I could – there's so much more. There's
so
more.
Was Sega's apology enough for you?
It'll never be enough.
Okay, like, what if they release a really awesome Sonic game?
Then
– like next year.
Only if they, like, fire everyone who was above the original. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Okay. That was so that was mean.
Did you play Sonic games when you were a kid?
I played a couple. I was never very good at them. So, I like Sonic, but I don't even have the nostalgia coming into it. So, I can kind of imagine how someone would feel if they were a huge Sonic fan and they played this game.
I understand, like, actually, that they're very hurt.
If this were a Zelda game, I would just feel so betrayed. And Sonic has a huge
Chris
following.
Played a lot of Sonic, and he loved them.
The original Sonic games were great. And one of the things that I'm really glad that he noted in his apology was that, like, Sega is no longer a console. They don't make Sega Genesis anymore. What they have is their reputation. And their reputation is not doing so hot right now. Like, the fact that they weren't taking care of that was really dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's most visible with the Sonic stuff, which has been going downhill for years. Mm-hmm. But they also have put out games that haven't been terrible. Like, Alien Isolation was not a bad game.
That's true.
I mean, it's not for the same audience, but it was not a bad game. I just feel like Sonic kind of became the whipping boy. It was like, oh, Sonic, everybody loves it. We can just, you know.
Yeah.
Do our least bit of effort on this.
Very disappointing.
That was a team abroad in England who did Alien Isolation, right?
Creative Assembly, yes.
Yeah. What I learned today was that Sega Sega owns Atlus, which is one of my favorite game companies. They made the game Catherine, and that was really surprising to me. Say, don't often make the, you know, great family-friendly titles that we kind of know Sega for. And now I'm scared. I feel like they're letting Atlus do their own thing. He actually mentioned in the apology that we can learn a lot from how Atlus makes good games that appeal to a Western audience. But I'm still, the fear of God is in me since I found out that Sega owns Atlus. Don't touch them. Just leave them alone. Let
them do
their thing.
That's interesting to say that Atlus games appeal to a Western audience, because I still feel like they're a little niche-y. Like,
they're very niche-y, but the people who love them love them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess consider that a broad audience.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I played Catherine and didn't play all of it because it was kind of disturbing. but, like, that's the only Atlus game I'd ever picked up.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, JRPG fan that sits next to me at the office, not this office, the IGN office. Hi, Megan, love you. She played all kinds of Atlus games, like, constantly.
Yeah.
And just for me, it's just like,
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're into JRPGs, for sure, Atlus is, you know Atlus, probably. But
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
What can we learn? What can we learn from Atlus?
Yeah, I'm not really going to hold a grudge against Sega. What I am going to do is it has altered the way that I see them permanently, and I think that's punishment enough. I wouldn't.
So
call
she's
this.
Not holding a grudge, but she just doesn't trust them or like them.
Yeah, I'll put it that way. I'm not.
It's,
I'm not
like
angry.
The person who told you that Santa Claus doesn't exist. It's just. Just ruins all of your hopes and
yeah. I don't know. Like I'm not angry. I don't trust them anymore. That's I don't know.
Well, they'll have to earn your trust back, Courtney.
I guess
that's
so.
All.
I hope they will for everyone's sake. Yeah.
And the TV show's okay. There was a Sega a Sonic TV show that came out at the same time as the show, and I watched a couple episodes just for comparison. And if you care about the characters and the story, it's way better than the game. So,
so there Fair we enough. Have it. All right. I gotta take a deep breath here before we get into our main topic of the day.
Nicole has been raging.
Yes, when I first read this article, it was like fire coming out of the top of my head. Just like anger and inside out.
How long have you been on fire?
3 days.
Three days now. That's a long time.
When did it come out? The article came out on Monday, I think.
Yeah.
So Jane Brody is a journalist who's been writing for the New York Times for like forever. Wrote this article. I don't know if it appeared in the hardcover paper version or if it was just online. It doesn't matter much anyhow. I don't know anybody who gets the New York Times in paper form.
I just know my friends were forwarding it to me.
Oh, that's never good.
Yeah. So Jane Brody wrote this really long, very alarmist piece about how screen time and screen addiction is ruining our kids. And this type of thing isn't surprising to me at all. Like, this happens all the time. So before we go through and debunk everything that she said, just, you know, if you said your friends were sharing it with you, I think the thing that bothered me the most about this mm-hmm. is I found it through Facebook. It was shared by one of the former members of my mom's club, whose kids are, like, aged out. Like, my mom's kids are preschool kids. So her kids are elementary school now, shared by her. These people have so many other friends that are parents of kids in elementary school. And you can just see this terrible chain of misinformation just going everywhere. And that's what makes me really angry about it. Because, you know, before I had a kid, I'd be like, eh, whatever, stupid people spewing crap. But now
– you have to deal with that.
Yes, I do have to deal with that.
Yeah, you have to deal with that if you're dealing with screens in a practical way.
Yeah.
You have to deal with those parents who think that showing a kid a screen is the worst thing you can possibly do as a parent.
Right.
And shaming you all the time. Yeah. And I just think that's –
It's one of the many things you can be shamed for as the parent of a young child.
Yeah, exactly.
It's terrible.
Why? Why do people have this urge to judge and shame other parents?
I have no idea.
I think it's because there's so much at stake when you're raising kids. And it starts when you're pregnant, Simone.
The shaming.
Oh, you know, you read all those pregnancy books. Did you read those?
I read like two. But I spent a lot of – I told you guys this week. I spent a lot of time on babycenter.com. Hey. Holy crap. Tons and tons of hours.
Yeah, because you don't want to do anything wrong.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's so much at stake.
You know, pregnancy takes such a long time, and it feels like it's such a longer time than it actually is when you're pregnant. So it's like they do these things like at 3 months, this is what's happening. At 6 months, this is what's happening. Like you go back and you look at those things over and over again. It's like, oh, my baby, that's what they look like now. You know, it's – Simone is shivering like she doesn't ever want to be pregnant ever.
I was in the store the other day and I think I saw a magazine cover with some pregnant celebrity on it. And the first thought that popped into my mind was, oh, my God, I wouldn't be able to drink wine for 9 months if I were pregnant. I can never have children.
Or coffee.
Oh, I don't think coffee's so bad.
Okay.
Actually, lots of things say, you know, as long as you're not an alcoholic guzzling wine, an occasional glass of wine here and there
Fair
is
enough.
Completely fine.
Fair enough.
Anyhow, away from the
–
well, back to the sort of parent shaming. So Jane Brody wrote this article. It's got a lot of stuff in here. I think, you know, the reason it was written now is because there is a documentary called Web Junkie that's going to be shown on PBS next Monday, this coming Monday. That just talks about addicted teenagers in China and one of the places parents can send their addicted teenagers.
Yeah. You know, an article is going to be good when it starts with a white person telling you some generalization about China.
Especially an old white person talking about young people in China.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The thing about screen addiction, if that – which I don't think is a great term. I do think that people can get addicted to certain habits like drinking, like smoking, like being in a game. But those things are never caused necessarily by that substance. It's about the chemicals that your brain needs to feel happy.
The personality of the person. It's individual.
Yeah, the people who become alcoholics are alcoholics because they might be depressed, because they feel like they need that support in their lives and there's something missing there that they need. And so they feel compelled to be unhealthy. And I think that it's the same thing for people who are addicted to games. So it's kind of unfair to say it is the screens that are the danger, it is the games that are the danger, when it's probably far more likely that there are some depressed teenagers out there who are using games to regulate their moods, who are using games to medicate themselves. Like, that's not necessarily a problem with screens. It's a problem with society and the way that we treat mental health.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I followed the link in Jane Brody's article to the other New York Times article that talked about the documentary that actually deals with these Chinese youth in these boot camps. They're trying to cure them of this supposed addiction. And this writer actually was trying to research that and asked, is internet addiction real? Mm-hmm. And he said he got 29 million replies and no definitive answer. And I think that's really important because the controversy is raging and we don't have definitive answers and good research about whether internet addiction actually even exists.
Yeah.
And so these kids are getting sent off to these boot camps and they're kind of military style.
Yeah.
And they're treating them with these therapies and I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch the documentary, but I'm really skeptical about that. I think that happens a lot when kids are teenagers and parents feel out of control, like they don't have control over their kids' behavior and they're afraid. So they send them off to these wilderness camps or boot camps or something, hoping that somebody can save them.
Right.
It's an interesting phenomenon. I think that parents can get hysterical really quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not helpful.
I don't have any personal experience with this, but I just feel like there's no easier way to lose your teen's trust in you than to ship them off to some other people to deal with their problems.
Yes.
Well, when that happens, you know that your relationship is really in bad shape already. Yeah.
Yeah. So to give Jane some credit, like I was reading through this story, I wasn't angry immediately. Like I didn't like the headline, but I know sometimes the writers aren't actually the ones who write the headlines.
It's
the copy editors or whatnot. So I was reading through like first paragraph, okay. Second paragraph, okay. Third paragraph, getting a little bit worse until I got down to the bottom. And when she says, often pre-verbal toddlers are handed their parents' cell phones and tablets to entertain themselves when they should be observing the world around them and interacting with their caregivers, which struck a note with me because I at one time did have a pre-verbal toddler. Well, actually, you know what? Maybe she was never actually a pre-verbal toddler because she didn't start toddling until after she could talk. So I guess that – but anyhow, I have a toddler who we use screens all the time. Sometimes she uses them by herself. But more often than not, I am using them with her, which means she is interacting with me, her caregiver, at the same
screen. Wait. You mean that parents and children can share a device and use it to forge a relationship and connect with each other?
Just like they can share a storybook maybe, Simone.
Yeah. Whoa. That's, did you just equate
crazy
games and apps to storybooks, Linda?
I did.
As if they both often had pictures and
I'll
text.
I'll do it again.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't be so snarky.
You know, the other point there is something, Linda, you and I have talked about before, with it's kind of like it's easy to judge people who are taking care of kids, especially those who are like stay-at-home moms or dads. But like it's like how long can you sit there and play with Daniel Tiger figurines before you lose your mind. Like
I can't do it for very long myself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to be able to do something else together.
Couple hours, I'm done, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is another thing that makes me think this article is out of touch. So I don't know what was going on when she had kids, but my feeling is that she probably doesn't remember what it was like or her kids were in daycare all the time. That's all I have to say. Nothing against kids that are in daycare. Absolutely not. I'm just saying that, like, you know, you're not spending 8 hours a day with this child when
I think there can be some cognitive dissonance there of other parents are doing it wrong. But I have a good reason. I'm doing it this way because I can justify it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but I kind of think maybe it's true that kids under two shouldn't be in front of screens much. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's pretty little to be in front of a screen. But once they're over two, what we used to do is sit the kids down in front of Barney or Sesame Street while we made dinner.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad about that. I think that's probably fine.
Yeah.
They were entertained. We made dinner. Everyone was happy.
Yep.
And as long as you don't do it for long, huge stretches of time, I just don't think it's harmful.
One of the lines she included in her article was that, like, kids learn best from real people, which is like, yeah, Okay, I could buy that as being true. But the fact that you have a screen doesn't mean that there's not a real person or that that they can't learn from screens, too.
Or that they're even on the screen 24/7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole guideline for the under two thing is actually related specifically to language development and the fact that it's easier for kids to learn language from somebody who's right there in the room with them as opposed to a screen. And that's really all it was about. So, like, Anna watched some stuff before she was two, but I'm like, her language is doing just fine. Like, I think we're okay there. I don't have much to worry about.
She was verbal pre-toddle.
Exactly.
Well, I know some of these things make you think that, you know, putting your kid in front of any screen at any time is tantamount to giving them, you know, bleach and letting them drink it. I don't
Here's
know.
Lighter,
you know,
kids.
Poison.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. It's not that
and
horrible.
I understand that. I think that we are. Humans are compulsively fascinated with screens for sure. I was talking to someone just this weekend who suggested, you know, if you're on summer break, et cetera, let your kids have unlimited screen time for a week. See if they actually want to keep playing those games 24/7 after that week is done. They won't want to. Kids have a lot of energy. They want to run around outside. They want to play together.
Yeah.
If, you know, once they get that out of their system, it's not going to be a problem necessarily unless there's some other issue going on there.
And one of the comments on the article made a really good point, which was that her kids go to camp and they play sports and they have tons of stuff to do. They have chores to do at home. And she feels really fine about letting them, you know, use a screen for an hour a day after they've been out running around all day.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, and Jane Brody mentioned in this article that she has a 10-year-old, was it a nephew?
Grandson.
Sorry. Ooh, who gets up half an hour early every day to play video games before school.
Which is something that
awesome.
Kate, our previous guest, said that her kids do.
That reminded me of that.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, people see it as a bad thing, but it's, you know, it's a kid doing time management, managing their own time, getting up early, which Lord knows I would never do, to do something fun before they go into their daily routine. And I think that's really cool and actually really smart of them.
Yeah,
Yeah.
In the same paragraph as that, it's kind of funny how she phrases it. My grandsons, and then she refers to their grandfather, which I can only assume is her husband, but she kind of phrases it funny. I guess he picks them up before or after school, and he says they're on their handheld devices the whole ride to and from, and the grandfather says, there's no conversation anymore. I'm like, well, you know what, Grandpa? Maybe they don't want to talk to you.
I will say that that is sort of a common symptom of being a tween teen, you know, and like also she goes straight from that to like kids aren't talking or communicating into teenagers can't stop texting. It's an epidemic. And I'm like, texting is talking.
Yeah.
That's what that is. And it's not new. Teenagers have always been incredibly social.
Yes.
You know, like I think all the time about how like when I was a teenager, I didn't have if there was a time that I could be with my friends, that I wanted to be with them, like I didn't really get burned out ever. And now I'll hang out with someone for a couple of hours and I'm like, well, enough of that. I'm going to go be alone. It's going to be great. But when I was a teenager, I just wanted to be with other people constantly because you know, that was how I
You know, when
was
I was
fun.
When I was living in France, I would do like 5-hour long phone calls with my friends back in the States. I don't know what I would talk about on the phone for 5 hours now. But, you know, on top of those phone calls, we'd also be doing instant messaging. We also had huge emails that we would send back and forth. We also had a blog where we would post about our days. Like, teenagers, all of this is screen time, minus the phone. But it's also all communication. It's all reading. It's all writing. And those are two really important facets of screen time that I think are neglected when we talk about teens being obsessed with their phones and obsessed with the internet. Like, more often than not, they are communicating, and they could also be she mentions at the end of her article something about how teens older kids and teenagers need to be reading, and they need to be doing imaginative play. A lot of what teenagers do online could be reading stories or even writing stories. They could be creating their own works, and that is screen time, but, you know, it is creative.
That, you know, reminds me that often, in most cases, reading, even if you're reading a book, is on a screen these days.
Exactly.
So there's your screen time again.
Yeah.
What are we always going to say that anything on paper is better than anything on screens.
Yeah.
I find the whole argument very odd.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a very different attitude towards that when there are no trees left.
Oof. Yeah.
I have printouts of everything.
Yes. Because you're weak and old.
We're recyclers.
I'm sorry.
Singer.
What you were saying about kids in the car, I actually – counterpoint to that, the kids that she was talking about in the article aren't preteens. They're 8 and 10 years old. So I think there is something to be said there, maybe about an effort on both sides, like the grandfather and the kids, to make conversation. And one of the things I think we brought up in the office was, why not talk to them about their games? I don't think that it is, you know, outlandish to say no being on the phone when you're in the car with grandpa. I know I personally, no matter how hard I try when I'm having a conversation with someone, if I'm also trying to send a text message or an email at the same time, I will invariably neglect the person that I am talking to just because I realize, you know, that I can't talk and write at the same time. It's the same if I'm writing fiction and trying to talk to someone. But so yeah, I think it's not totally off the wall to say, yeah, put your phones down in the car and talk to grandpa. But grandpa also has to, you know, make an effort to talk about something that the kids are interested in.
Yeah.
Tell me about your day.
That's reasonable. I think that, like, if you go on a date with someone, for instance, and they're on the phone all night, that's not cool.
Dating, though, is very different from sitting with your grandparents.
Okay. Yeah. But I just mean, like, the idea of, like, creating a dedicated time to engage with somebody else. However, it's also worth paying attention to the fact that they're not talking about the ride, you know, on a weekend to go to baseball practice. I'm talking about specifically the ride home from school.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't know about you guys, but I was always pretty dead in that, like, I needed a couple hours.
Yeah.
But that's fair. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, just figure out why they're playing their game, talk to them about their game, engage with them about that, and then find a compromise that doesn't sacrifice your relationship.
Yeah. You can make rules about no being on your phone in the car with grandpa, or no being on your phone during meals.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Or you can make all kinds of rules like that. But just being hysterical about screen time addiction in general is not helping.
Yeah. Yes. So there are lots of stuff. I'm not going to spend all go through all of her article because there are so many things we can debug in there. But most of the studies that she cites are at least 8 years old. She fails to acknowledge any of the newer studies that have been done. And there's one part where she talks about violent games and violent behavior. There's a whole paragraph about how this and this and this can have this effect, said by this guy, Dimitri, I forget what his name is. But anyhow, I looked him up because he's in the Seattle Children's Research Institute or whatever. I looked him up, and he's conducting research now about those things, but he just says he believes that's what will happen. That is not conclusive evidence. That is somebody saying, I think something. Simone, I think your scarf is ugly.
Whoa.
But it's the same thing. It's the
Show
same
me
type
your
of
facts.
Thing.
Exactly. Show me your empirical evidence.
That is the point I am making.
I mean, a lot of the studies that have been done in violence and gaming focus more on short-term aggression, which you can get from traffic or stubbing your toe or watching a sports game or watching a TV show or reading a book that's getting really, like, climactic and really, like, excited or really frustrated about something that happened. And, yeah, of course, for the next, like, you know, 5 minutes to an hour, depending on how good that book was, you're going to have a lot of feelings. But that's not something that's, you know, unique to gaming, and it's not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot. And, like, the idea behind, I think, short-term aggression isn't necessarily wholly that you are doing a violent thing in a game. It's also that games are hard and games can be frustrating.
Yeah.
And games can be competitive. And you get the same kind of feeling of aggression from playing soccer against another team.
Just adrenaline.
Competing with other people.
Yes.
Yeah. Or my example from earlier, waiting for websites to load. Nothing makes me more angry and more ready to just slam my fist down on the desk. But, you know.
Yeah. So if you're interested in some counter arguments to this stuff, I actually, when I posted the link on Twitter and said I was boiling with rage, another person in the industry was like, well, do you have anything solid that will be the opposite thing? And I sent her to the APA's Benefits of Playing Video Games report, which is actually awesome on our site. Kelly Dunlap, who is one of the psychologists that we love, did like a broke down all the language in that so that a layperson can understand it. And you can find that on pixkin.org. That's a good counter-argument to that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, the American Psychological Association is generally a pretty well-regarded source.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even one of the studies that Jane Brody cited from the American Academy of Pediatrics talked a lot about the positive effects of screen time, which she didn't mention.
Yeah.
So even the pediatricians like some screen time.
All right.
All right. So anyhow, I think you can
draw your own conclusions.
Yes, draw your own conclusions.
About how she's wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. No, these things just, you know, like I said, this one made me more angry than now as a parent as it would have when I was.
Yeah.
Not a parent and not hanging out with other parents.
Yeah.
So let's go into what we're playing.
Woo.
Who wants to start?
Okay, I'll start. I just downloaded a game today that's made by Spry Fox, and it's called Alpha Bear, like alphabet, but with bear on the end, like the animal, the bear. And basically, it's a word-making game, so you have tiles with letters on them, and you combine them to make words, and when you make words, your bears get bigger. And if you get a certain number of points, you get a new bear, and the bears give you they have special abilities. So like one of them, the skinny bear, if you have words that have an S in them, you get a bonus for the letter S. The easy bear gets bonuses for E-A-S-Y. So it's so cute. It's so freaking cute, you guys. It is adorable. check it out just for the cuteness. It is free initially. And then, of course, there are things that you can buy to make your gameplay smoother. So far, I haven't needed to. I have been playing only for an hour, but
nonstop.
Is it challenging?
It is. It is pretty challenging. There was a timed one that I did that was kind of hard. I haven't failed yet. If you don't combine one of the letters soon enough, like after it seems like five turns or so, it'll turn into a rock and then you can't use it anymore and it just sits there and takes up space. So they start out green and then they gradually get more and more towards the red end of the spectrum and then they turn into rocks and then they're gone.
I am always looking for good word games.
You should check it out. It's adorable.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It sounds cool. Courtney, how about you?
So 4th of July kind of threw me off. I haven't been playing many new video games, but I did play an awesome new board game called Snake Oil that I really like, where basically you get a bunch of word cards that are things like puppy and a cat, but not all animals, cup, pants, paddle, just like random short nouns. Mm-hmm. And then one person in your group has to draw like a roll card, and it can be anything from like president to plumber to tailgater to everyone in your group has to combine two noun cards and try to sell that product to the person it is. So like one round we had was somebody was a nanny, and I sold the nanny a trash pinata for getting revenge on the kids.
Nice.
Break open the pinata. It's full of trash. but it's really fun and creative because a big part of it is like creating these sales pitches and you have to get really creative with some of them.
That sounds so fun.
It's actually, it's super awesome and so far seems pretty kid friendly.
Nice.
And
very cool.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So Linda, I hear you downloaded Batman.
I did. The new Batman game, Arkham Knight on the Xbox One. And it's, you know, as usual these days, beautiful graphics and good music and stuff like that. I did not get very far because there is an awesome Batmobile, but the game sort of turns into a driving game almost. Like chasing people around on these streets and the Batmobile is sliding around corners. Ooh. And I kept running into walls a lot and stuff like that. But I thought it was interesting because I wanted to see the difference between the T-rated Batman games, and now this new one is M-rated.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think from what I've been able to tell, it's about blood and torture. This new game has more of that kind of content in it. And so it's a little bit darker. But I think for older teens, it looks like it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Cool. So I actually had a chance to play lots of little things in very short snippets. So speaking of crashing into walls with cars, I checked out that Does Not Commute game by the Mediocre Studio.
Oh.
It's actually a lot of fun. So what it is like you're told, like, this person needs to leave their house here and get to work here at this other place. And then you drive them there in their little car. You try to do it as quickly as possible because it's time. And then once you get them there, you get the next one. Okay, this person needs to go here from here. But the thing is when you start the second one, the first one is playing.
Oh.
So you build and build and build, and you've got, like, six other people commuting on the street based on where you have sent them. But by the time you get up to, like, your sixth or seventh, you got to be really creative about how you get to the end point.
Oh, that sounds so great. I'm going to
It is awesome.
That
it was really, really fun. I was like, the studio is called Mediocre. I have to try out their game. Their game is not mediocre. It is actually really, really fun. And, you know, kind of hard to control a little bit because it's different cars. They go different speeds. They have different turn radius. So there was that. That was cool.
It sounds a little bit like using Google Maps to commute in Seattle.
Yeah.
Trying to find a route that's not completely.
Yeah. So that one was fun. And then I played a couple educational games that I'll be writing stuff on Pixkin about. One of them is called Sleep Furiously. It is a word tile game. You get all these tiles with different words on them. You can make a sentence, any sentence you want. It just has to be grammatically correct.
Oh.
So you can make these really crazy, you know, really weird sounding sentences, but they're grammatically correct. So the goal is to make the longest sentence you can out of these tiles.
That is cool.
That remains grammatically correct, but, you know, it's like Mad Libs. You can come up with some really funny things. So that one was cool. And then I also played a game called Divide by Sheep. Which is a cute little kind of math game. Well, it's cute in the beginning. So you're trying to get your sheep that are stranded on these island things to a raft. Like there's a police sheep or something that's there to pick them up. And so the islands have like different numbers of like segments. So there's one sheep can sit on each segment. And so in some cases, you have to jump this big group of sheep to a smaller island, and then the ones that don't fit will fly off into the water, which, you know, it's kind of bad in thought, but it's not really, you know, that objectionable. But later on, there are wolves, and you've purposefully have to feed some sheep to the wolves.
Oh, no.
And they're still just cute. It's like they go and the wolves' bellies get big and they're all like, nom, nom, nom. But there's a point where you have to send your sheep through like this electric barrier thing and it slices them in half. Then there is blood and half sheep parts. But you can send those half sheep parts to the raft and they will be put together in like this little ball and sent off to sheep hospital.
Okay, this is not an Anna's app, I hope.
No, although she was playing it a little. Like it's like as soon as I saw, I'm like, this is too complicated for her. It's above her level.
Yeah.
This is like really, you know. But she was playing like the first few levels with it. My husband was sitting with her and helping her, but she was kind of getting it until it got like really complicated.
Yeah.
And then like yesterday, she's like, I'm going to play the sheep game. I'm like, okay. And she like starts it up from where I was.
Oh, no.
Where I had stopped because it was just too hard. And she's like, Mommy, why does it work? I'm like, pick another app. Just pick another app. You can't do this one. And then I did get to play a couple hours of Dragon Age Inquisition earlier this week. And as I noted in my tweet, I did forget some of the controls. Like
that
in a battle.
Always happens.
I'm like in a battle, low health. I'm like, where's my health potion? I forget how to drink a health potion. Like, where is this? It's like inventory. No, it's not inventory. It's like, where is this menu? I remember what it looks like, but I don't know how to do it. So
you wouldn't think it would be that hard, but it's always that hard.
No, that happened to me last night. I picked up Hyrule Warriors for the first time in months, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
When you're just pressing buttons.
Yeah, luckily that one's a bit of a button masher, so it doesn't matter quite as much. But I kept on, like, using my big attack when there was nobody around by mistake.
Oh,
I'm
no.
like, oh, and I wasted it.
One of the things that was good about that Dragon Age, you know, debacle trying to find controls is that when I finally did find the health potion thing, I saw at the bottom the horse and I'm like, oh, that's how you call your horse, because that is something I had forgotten how to do the last time I played.
I know Kizzy had a lot of trouble with that. I think it might have ended up being a glitch on the part of on her park she was playing the first week it was released, she could not figure out how to get her horse back. She's wandering for hours, just walking, no horse.
Yeah, getting the horse wasn't the last time I had played it, not this past time, the time before. It wasn't worth me sitting there and trying to find the controls for 20 minutes. I'm like, whatever, I'll just walk. It's fine. And then, believe it or not, I did get to play some Hearthstone while I was gone. Not a lot. Like, there were days that I didn't play, which should be a huge shocker. And maybe that's why I was so tired. It's like I'm in withdrawal or something. But
we need to talk about your little problem.
Yeah.
Send you to a Chinese boot camp.
Jesus.
Sorry.
No. That's great.
Call back.
Yeah. But I played the latest Tavern Brawl just in time before it expired. I've got like my full on quests. I've got to catch up a little bit. But they announced there's a new mode coming soon.
What? A new mode that is permanent or?
Well, they sent a bunch of scrolls to a lot of gaming outlets that says, hello, hero, and all this kind of, you know, vague, jargony type stuff that says, look out for July 22nd because something is coming. So,
Nicole, why don't we get scrolls? Why does no one send us any scrolls?
Blizzard sent us a scroll. No, I'm asking you, Blizzard. Blizzard, if you're listening, please send us scrolls.
I actually don't think I've ever tried to contact them. Maybe I should do that.
Maybe they just don't know that we want their scrolls.
You're giving them all this free advertisement.
I know.
Every week. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Thanks so much for listening. As always, if you have questions, comments, or feedback, you can send those to hello@pixelkin.org. We actually got a great comment on our post for last week's podcast.
Yeah.
From Jack? Was it Jack?
Yeah, Jack's great. He's a friend of mine, actually. So.
Oh, okay. That explains it.
Oh, no. He was talking about whether you get free stuff if you play as a girl in a role-playing
game,
right?
Yeah, and he said that he has gotten free stuff.
He has gotten free stuff.
When he played as a woman.
Interesting.
Not fair.
Yeah. He said something else, too. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jack.
Yeah, so you can comment on our articles on pixelkin.org, and we read those. You can find us on Facebook, Pixelkin, on Twitter, @pixelkin_org, and @gamingwithmoms. And I think I covered all the bases there.
Yep. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. All right. So thanks again for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.
Bye. Bye.
This podcast was recorded in the studios of the Jack Straw Cultural Center in Seattle, Washington.